one more panelist, but I made sure that before anybody got here today and it opened to the public, that all the walls were checked and there are two brand new tags that just happened in the last 15 minutes, which isn't cool. And it makes me feel like what I should do is cancel this event, because it isn't good for the city of Los Angeles to try to do something positive and be hosted very graciously by the center to have that happen. That my gut is telling me that I should probably do that. Although I think that that would not be very fair to panelists who took a lot of time and have worked to be here today. So I'm going to ask that the person or persons who did this, when you have time, I don't know if you'll have the same amount of guts that you did to come see me as you did to write on a wall, but please see me. I'll help you whitewash it, or we'll take care of it together, because it really isn't fair. And just so that you know, I've already been asked to, you know, not consider coming back, because that has happened just in the last 10 minutes. So it's not appreciated. I don't mean to reprimand anyone, but I like my job. I want to be able to keep it, and it's not easy trying to do programs in graffiti art because of this reason. So whoever it was that did that, that's not right. I don't know what else to tell you. Hopefully you will find me soon and we can take care of it together. We're waiting for one more panelist and then we'll get started. Thank you. Thank you, Sabrina, and thank you to the National Center for the Preservation of Democracy. Again, I would also like to welcome you. I'm Elizabeth Morin. I work with the City of Los Angeles Department of Cultural Affairs. And I am very happy to be here today. This program is really important to me and obviously to the people who are here on the panel. We are hoping that today we discuss graffiti art in a very different way as we have seen in the past traditionally. We're very interested in the role that graffiti plays today as we see it become increasingly more ubiquitous. And it appears in corporate campaigns, in terms of city policy, in galleries, in museums, while the art form is still being practiced very strongly in out on the streets. The panelists today were very generous to come by and give us their time and share with us their expertise. These are the folks who are leaders in their respective fields, and each of them helps define and inform and shape what graffiti art means in different communities. We have the media who reports on it, writes about it. We have the writers slash artists who create the artwork. And we also have policymakers who respond and anticipate the expression in its many different forms. This panel came about for two reasons. In November of 2003, the City of Los Angeles Cultural Affairs Department organized the first ever hip-hop exhibit. That was a very successful project, and it really brought up this question of, is graffiti considered part of hip-hop culture? As someone who worked on that exhibit very intimately, it was interesting for me to hear some of the dialogue that came out of that. A lot of people felt like, well, no, graffiti does not have a place under the rubric of hip-hop culture, and other people were very happy to be considered as part of the visual representation or interpretation of hip-hop culture. So we took inspiration from movement from that exhibit, and in talking to some of the artists, we were led to Shelley Leopold at the LA Weekly, who we'll talk a little bit later about a story she's doing on a graffiti art crew here in Los Angeles. And we thought, well, this would be a great opportunity to invite the people who make this happen and have a discussion with you, the public, about what is graffiti, what does it look like, who defines graffiti, where is it found, what does Los Angeles graffiti look like, and what is its role and impact internationally and globally, and also in the city in many different forms. I'm very excited to be here. I would like to dedicate this panel today and this program to a very good friend, someone who first introduced me to the world of graffiti art. His name is Tempt One, and I will kindly ask you to please, if you can, just say a good wish and a warm thought for this person, as he is in the hospital. He hasn't been very well, and because of him, I think that I've been able to appreciate and understand a little bit of what graffiti art means, and also to folks like the panelists here who really helped me understand and
appreciate it and look at it intelligently and try to respond to it in a way that is positive. So with that, I'd like to introduce to you your moderator for today. Our moderator is Roger Gassman. Roger has been involved in the art scene since he was 14 years old while growing up in Washington, D.C. He has spent over 15 years at the organizational forefront of street and the graffiti art movement, traveling throughout the world painting graffiti and helping it reach mainstream audiences. He founded and published two very well-respected pop culture magazines of the last decade. While You Were Sleeping was the first magazine he started when he was only 19 years old. It focused on graffiti and the outsider underground culture. The second, Swindle, co-publishes with Shepard Fairey from Obey Giant, and that focuses on art, music, fashion, and culture. He has also published and authored more than a dozen very well-regarded books on the topics of photography, street art, and of course, graffiti art. He has helped nurture the careers of many internationally recognized artists, produced films and commercials, and in fact, I watched one of the films, Infamy. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. Produced films and commercials and has helped a diverse list of automotive, beverage, fashion, cellular, and gaming companies deliver their brand messages with authenticity and style. Because of his background as a graffiti writer, he is a trusted mediator between the underground art scenes, mainstream culture, and corporation, always keeping the artist's best interest in mind. He provides brands with access to works of world-class graffiti artists. By remaining on the cutting edge while respecting the history of street culture, Roger will continue to be trusted by artists and commercial clients alike to showcase work with respect and genuine expression. So without further ado, I welcome Roger Gassman.
Hello, thank you, welcome, and thank you to Franny for the slideshow that you all have been watching and hopefully enjoying. I'll start by introducing our panelists and letting them tell you a little bit about themselves. First, we have Retina.
Hello, my name is Retina, and I'm very proud to be here. I've been doing graffiti for about 17 years, and it's something that I've enjoyed doing, and as I grow, I've been trying to get better and, you know, definitely be open to, you know, the differences, you know, the vandalism or you producing art and murals and stuff like that. So it's definitely great to be here today.
Shelley Leopold from the LA Weekly.
Shelley, Deputy Creative Director of the LA Weekly. And we've been covering the underground happenings.
I'm Adele.
Hi, my name's Al Adele, and I'm happy to be here. It's a beautiful, wonderful, incredible afternoon outside. I've been working in this field for quite a long time with friends and colleagues, and I'm very committed to helping artists at all levels, at all ranges of their careers, but especially at the early range of their careers. So happy to be here and have a discussion about this issue.
Chaz Bojorquez.
My name is Chaz. I've been writing since 1969. I bring my culture, being a Chicano, and then many of my works have been shown in galleries, besides going up on walls in early years, and then they're collected by major museums, including LACMA, MoCA, and Smithsonian, and I can still contribute to many articles and travel around the world all the time.
Slick.
Hi, my name is Slick, El Presidente of This Is It, Inc. Tell the truth, I'd rather be painting right now than speaking in front of all you. But I'm just happy to be a part of, you know, if I can shed some light on this this ongoing issue of like graffiti versus fine art versus commercial. If I could be of some help, there I am.
Yeah. And finally, Dan Freeman from the MTA.
No, actually, I'm from Caltrans. Deputy Director for Maintenance for the local Caltrans section. And my experience with graffiti has mostly been through our basement, painting out all the stuff that winds up on our facilities on the freeway system, but I'm happy to be here nevertheless. So.
Thank you. I thought we would start with Chaz, who is seeing graffiti in Los Angeles longer than anyone on this panel and probably anyone in this room, and been participating in it and watching it grow. Just see how that has evolved and your role in it.
Well, it's real complex because my involvement first started with the Cholo style from the Zoot Suit. So as a little kid in the 50s. My uncle was a zoot suitor, and so is in identifying, having their identity in the 40s with the riots here in LA, LA being a significant place, and we were very close where the riots were happening. The Chicanos developed their own style, language, and also is they wanted to put their names on the walls using the prestigious letters of Old English, from the Old English coming from the Constitution, birth certificate, and in those times your draft, you know, into the military. That was the gang style, the New York style from the early 70s, maybe late 60s. I want to give Corn Bread a shout. Is the wild style, the New York style. That was a individual approach of just writing their names. Where here in the West Coast was about us. It was a group effort. It was about us here mentality. And New York was the me mentality. That mentality, that is the graffiti of the world. That is what the graffiti that we're going to be talking about. That's what you see up here in the on the wall. That's the world has taken that and embraced it. And I can say it's a beautiful thing because where I travel, I don't meet cultures, I meet individuals. And each one has contributed something. If the graffiti was a book, which there is now, everybody gets one page, everybody contributes, young and old.
Thank you. Al, could you discuss the conference and give people a little bit of background that you created in 1991 with the Getty that shed some light on graffiti, which was very groundbreaking at the time?
Sure. That conference was an incredible happening in the city. I see Carmelo Alvarez here, who was Carmelo somewhere. Carmelo Alvarez, who was very much part of this whole process. Basically what we did is we put 60 people together in a room, and maybe it was 90 people, 30 graffiti artists, 30 people working in the anti-graffiti realm, abating graffiti one way or the other, and 30 leaders, educational and political leaders, and we got federal mediators to come in and knock heads and get people to start talking to each other. We spent 3 days at the Getty. And after 3 days, we really started to open up to each other and understand from every possible angle what the issues were at that time. I've got to say that they're almost the same issues that we have today. They haven't changed any. But it was really a really good opportunity for people to just spend some time together, really understand each other, discuss things, and. A lot of good and bad came out of it. The good part that came out of it was that the Department of Cultural Affairs, through that process, established the Division of Youth Arts and Education, which is a new division. Was a new division that now Elizabeth runs here at Cultural Affairs, and it expanded our funding and our focus on the issues of youth arts. Developed new programs. One of the things that came out of the conference was. The need for programs for young people so they weren't on the street doing vandalism. And what we really tried to do in a civic way is to try to define the difference between street art and graffiti vandalism, and then try to get definitions so people would understand it. So I really thought it was really an incredible time for all of us in LA to come together and talk about these things. We did produce a report, which is something you can probably get if you ask Elizabeth to send it to you. I just reread it after 15 years, and I'm just shocked about how interesting all of these issues are and how much we're still in the same boat. Although today, of course, we're in a different place. I have a very positive message about where we are in the city culturally. Right now, we really have a we're moving into a situation where there's going to be a lot of support for the arts and culture. We have a mayor that really gets it, really understands what it's about. I think he's the first arts mayor that we've ever had in the city, and I worked for three of them. He's a person who really understands, really personally likes art, and understands and fights very hard for education and programs for kids. He's a person, and I am also, as president of the Cultural Affairs Commission, we're people that really are very, very strong about freedom of expression within my administration, the commission, and the mayor's administration. Censorship is going to be really fought hard. We really believe in equity, so really supporting artists across the board. And education and providing programs and opportunities for young people. So, you know, we have a situation now where we have a new activist commission, we have a new general manager coming into the department. We have, we're in a period right now where, you know, this country is very security conscious. I know everybody just, you know, the largest industry in this country has been the security industry that's grown over the last 5 years. So, in a period where we're all worried about potential terrorism and our neighbors and all of that stuff, community becomes much more important. So we really have to do things to strengthen our communities, and providing programs and opportunities for the young people in our neighborhoods is a very, very important issue.
What kind of programs have you implemented to keep kids off the street, and potentially mural programs as far as getting graffiti off the streets?
Let me just say this about graffiti. First of all, I really believe that graffiti is self-expression, and and artists are free to express themselves. Along with that, I really believe that artists have to be responsible when they express themselves. I mean, nobody likes a loudmouth in a party. Nobody likes a guy or a person who's always saying me, me, me. So we have to be responsible as artists. I think that there's a difference between art and vandalism. We have to be conscious of what that is. We have to, you know, use our ethics to make decisions about that. And whoever did the graffiti in the building here needs to think about that. I think we need to do things that really. I guess what I would say that we need to take the existentialism out of graffiti and graffiti art. I mean, it's not about us; it's about the world. If we could think of ourselves as part of the universe and part of the community instead of just victims or people that are separate from it, I think we can do a lot. We need to ask what we can do for others instead of what we can do for ourselves. And there's a lot that we can do to help the city, and the power of the pen is really, really important. So I would ask all of the artists out there that have a pen to think about the power of the pen and what they can do to help the city and change the city in a more positive way. A lot of the graffiti that I admire is political graffiti. It's about something else. It's not just about the person. So I would really call for the graffiti community out there to think about what they can do to think about not just aesthetic issues, not just themselves, but think about using the power that they've got out there in the community to make things better for the world.
Thank you. Slick, you're a great example of someone that did graffiti as a kid on the streets, learned it, and you really have been successful in so many different ways, from fine art to graphic design to clothing in the corporate world. What was that, how did you reach that success, and did you ever think that would happen in the beginning?
I don't know, I guess I just kept at it. It was something that I loved, and I just kept going at it, you know, trying to be the best that I could within our circles of our peers. I wasn't really concerned with people outside that circle, you know, and so I guess I focused on one thing and got the best I could at that and started to expand, go out of that circle. And I guess the first step was actually through apparel, clothing. T-shirts were a way, were an extension of getting up, you know, without doing graffiti. per se on a train or on a bus. I could do it on a t-shirt and hit as many, you know, just as many if not more people, you know, and make a little money on it too, which was kind of cool.
What did you think the first time you got a paying job to do graffiti or a mural for someone? Were you just so surprised that this thing I've been doing on the streets that people have told me I probably shouldn't be doing is now turning a buck?
No. I mean, yeah, part of me, would laugh inside, like, yeah, I'm pretty paid to do this. But that's just like the professionals in all kind of different fields. You know, you have doctors, lawyers, whatever. But we're professionals at what we do, and I feel at this point in my career, like, I deserve to get paid top dollar for what I do, you know. Just like any other professional, my lawyer costs several hundred dollars an hour, which I think I'm entitled to that as much as he is, you know.
Absolutely. Shelly, you're bringing graffiti up to very present today's terms with a cover story you have coming out in the LA Weekly next month. Could you talk a little bit about that and your background in being a fan of graffiti or a knowledgeable person of graffiti and what brought the story about?
Sure. I'm relatively new to Los Angeles. I've only been here about 3.5 years, so it was kind of a way of, you know, I've lived in almost every major city in the United States. I was already a fan of graffiti company, and LA was a totally different, you know, style and way of going about, because it's so spread out here and the styles were so interesting and different from, say, New York or Chicago. And so fortunately my career, you know, direction affords me the luxury of, you know, finding out about new artists and things going on. So that's kind of where I come from on that. Cover story is a profile of a crew, two crews, AWR, MSK.
Can you speak into the microphone a little bit?
Otherwise known as the Seventh Letter. And it's basically just an arts profile, a photo essay of the crew, because I think, I don't want to count anyone out here, but I think they're making a huge step forward in the way they handle themselves with the corporate entities, and also they're moving the styles in a different direction. And I just admire them as a, you know, force of artists, I guess you could say. And I can't take whole credit for the LA Weekly's coverage of graffiti and the underground arts, because they've been at it a long time, and they just, you know, in 1989, they did a cover story on, it was Ruben Martinez, I believe, who wrote about the K2S crew, and did a huge profile on those guys in 1989. So it's just continuing into LA Weekly's history.
One of those people you covered in that story, I'm sure, is Retina, who is a member of Seventh Letter and a well-respected artist in LA. And out of everyone on this panel, I think the guy that's out there in this, you know, on the street painting walls, hearing what kids have to say and getting feedback. What is it like living day to day as a graffiti writer in Los Angeles?
It's definitely changed, I believe, from when I first started. You know, I think when I first got into it, I didn't necessarily get into it because I thought it was illegal or I was going to get in trouble. It was just something that I liked, that I felt I had identified with, and that I wanted to do work to that same caliber. Did I ever think that I would be where I'm at today from doing that? Not really. And I always kind of kept an open mind, and I had a lot of good people along the way that kind of guided me, whether they were artists, gangsters, or different people in different kind of fields. I remember when we were trying to get walls, it was never a question about going to the city. It was more like if the gang neighborhood would allow you to paint their wall, you can do it. So later on, that's how we got a lot of walls in the mid-city area, was by going through them, through the different rival gangs. And then it was nice to do something that they could, you know, everyone could identify with. Of course, the work was abstract and it was kind of ego-based because it is your name and, you know, that is all you're promoting. But at the time, that was kind of all you knew. And as I grew older, I wanted to do work that was more reflective of the community. And then it kind of went more into the areas of muralism. You know, I obviously respect a lot of the traditional Los Angeles muralists. You know, I befriended a lot of them, and I really enjoy their work. And so nowadays, I think for a graffiti artist coming up, it's definitely a lot harder. You know, you've lost a lot of the major places that were illegal / legal yards where the kids can actually get a little bit better. You know, you lost Belmont, you lost Motor, you lost Venice. And I think
those are all places people could paint graffiti at fairly freely and not get hassled and not really damage any property.
And you could kind of hone in on your skills. And, you know, there would be times where, you know, they would get raided and stuff like that. But by having those controlled areas, which I think the city didn't really realize, they saw it more as a blight. But, you know, no one would really see it. Was it kind of contained it to a certain degree. And it also helped, you know, the artists actually flourish and they could take their time. And when you lost those areas, you had this onslaught of a lot of graffiti just taking place on the freeway, started off with the murals. And I think what has to be noted, because we're graffiti writers, doesn't mean that we like every piece of graffiti that's out there. You know, we have a very keen eye. We like, you know, what looks good. And obviously painting on murals, touching anything that belongs to Caltrans is very off limits to a person from my crew because of what that entails, because of what we have to lose, and because of what we're trying to do. And it doesn't say that it doesn't happen, and it's sad when you see it, especially when the kids, you know, I think what's happening is that they see that they could paint on a mural and it's gonna last because the city has issues where they can't just go over it or paint over it. And at that point, I don't know if they're necessarily really just trying to destroy the mural. They just want their name to be up because they want to be recognized, they want to be seen. And that's the only place where, you know, their work is being, you know, it's staying long enough. And what happened after that was now it's going off onto all parts of the freeway where it becomes, it's just all over the place. I don't think you can necessarily really control stopping graffiti. You could put all the laws, you know, you could send them to jail, you know, they could get shot in the hood or whatever. Obviously these people have a certain drive that they want to pursue this. And I think what can happen is by having these places, which is a tricky subject, but, you know, by having places, you can maybe help it get better, as opposed to having a lot of bad graffiti. You could have maybe a lot of, you know, good graffiti and stuff that you actually enjoy looking at and stuff like that, you know. But I think there has to be an openness with the city, and it can't just be we're always just going to lock these guys up, or we're just going to keep finding them, or we're going to, you know, spend $1 million here erasing it, as opposed to, I think a lot of people don't really like looking at bland walls, you know. And what happens is if you're painting graffiti writers are identifying with other graffiti writers. That's why I can have a wall that's not necessarily sanctioned by the city, but that's still running 10 years later, and it's never been touched by graffiti. Is my painting better than, you know, George Yepes or Eloy Torres? No, probably not. But because they feel that I come from the same background, you know, my work tends to get respected, which is, it's not fair in a sense, you know what I mean? But if there was more discussions like this with people that come from different fields, and then, you know, that story gets back out there, I think eventually all that stuff will start to relate, and then people will begin to see that the city isn't really against them, and they don't need to really just destroy everything.
Dan, coming from Caltrans, what's your thoughts on what Retina just said, and what is Caltrans' take on graffiti and your experience with graffiti?
Well, actually, I'm surprised to hear him say that he doesn't try and go out on Caltrans property, because it seems like we get an awful lot of it. It seems like we're a favorite target. But my experience really hasn't been that positive. It's mostly through abatement efforts. And either the abatement efforts themselves or the complaints I get, because our abatement efforts don't occur quickly enough. We get a tremendous amount of complaints from the public about graffiti on state facilities. We are criticized a lot by public officials and governor's office and people in Caltrans even about why we can't keep up on this better than we do. So, you know, I'm you know, kind of on the tail end of it, where, you know, we're just trying to keep up with keeping our facilities presentable and things like signs, you know, safety signs and regulatory signs, you know, it's a real problem for us. But yeah, I'm for working with the community. If there are things that we could do to help facilitate what he was talking about, like, you know, make a space available, maybe that would be okay. But, you know, we'd have to, you know, work together. But, yeah, my thoughts are that it's a big problem for the state, and whatever we can do to work with the community and minimize it would be okay.
Wonderful places like Motor Yard and even the Venice Pavilion, where, yes, it was a draw for graffiti artists. At the same time, it was probably keeping a majority of those graffiti artists from the streets or other places.
Well, those places were fabulous places. I mean, there were cultural monuments to the city, and I'm really sorry that they got torn down. I mean, I think we have to fix the education system in this city, and then provide really significant programs for kids, for youth. I mean, not everybody can go into the ROTC. Not everybody can become a junior policeman or whatever. I mean, most of these programs are like all military-based programs. A lot of the creative kids don't want to do that, so they tend to stay away from that and go on their own. I mean, I think that the abatement process in LA is atrocious. I hate the beiging of our city. I hate the vining of our city, painting vines everywhere. And that is just as bad as graffiti. That is just as bad as Mexico with barbed wire and Texas Rangers. I mean, I do at the same time, I understand what people have to do to get a handle on this thing. And I was Carmelo and I actually worked in MacArthur Park for 5 years doing graffiti abatement. We were in the park for 5 years every morning abating graffiti. And one of the things that we learned was not to get frustrated. Because when graffiti frustrates you, I'm really talking about the negative of graffiti vandalism. I think graffiti is an art form. And I think the aesthetics of graffiti are very important, very positive. Right now we're in a battle almost with parts of the city that would like to just ban the aesthetics. And they're not going to get away with that, obviously. That's not going to happen. But I'm really very much for the artist, very much for the style, very much for the aesthetics of it. But we have to do something about the vandalism. And all I can say is that, no, we do need to work on the education programs of the city. We're going to work on that. We need to develop significant programs for kids that are creative kids that are not going to just, you know, go into clean and green or something like that. They really want to be artists. So we need to do that. And then we have to really work with these kids and make sure that they're responsible, that they understand that, you know, that they're not out there at Neverland. They're part of our society. And as part of our society, they've got responsibilities.
Well, I, of course, see walls over and over with graffiti being written on them. Graffiti being beiged out, gone over, graffiti being written on it again over and over. And then once in a while, the business owner, the city, whomever it is, will let artists paint a mural. All of a sudden, for the most part, 95% of the time, the graffiti problem is gone. And those artists so often, Retina, Slick, Chaz, whomever it is, several of them have patrons of the arts that, you know, pay for them to paint these murals because they love what they're doing. Or they're doing it because it's fun, it's communal, and it's reminding them of when they were younger kids out there painting for fun. It seems like there's an abundance of artists in the city that would paint the walls, you know, just for supplies, and that would help curb some of the graffiti issues. How is that something that can get put into effect?
Well, it is happening. I mean, the people in the private sector are having, there's a lot of people who think this is an interesting aesthetic. I mean, there's a lot of people in the city who understand this aesthetic and think it's a really interesting style. So many of those people have grown up to have businesses and whatever, and they've asked the kids in their neighborhoods or artists that are more, you know, better known, etc., to do murals or to do signs, etc., on their businesses that are in that aesthetic. There's been a movement in City Hall to try to squash that, to get rid of that type of aesthetic and signage, and we're very strong against that. We really feel that it doesn't matter what it is. It could be plaid, or it could be hip hop. You know, it's It isn't for us to decide what the aesthetic should be, but they should, we should allow the community to express themselves in any way possible. And if a shop owner wants to hire a group of kids in the neighborhood to paint their body shop name and graffiti style, they should be able to do that. And since there's such a movement in this community, an interest and an understanding of what the aesthetic's about, I expect a lot of graffiti artists, so-called, to be supported in that way. And that stops them from actually going, coming back around and tagging the shop, because if they have a commitment to it, and they already have their piece up and all that stuff. So, I mean, anything we can do to make this part of our ongoing cultural development, I'm all for it.
Chaz, you've traveled the world showing your art in different museums, over 100 galleries. How is LA graffiti, the Cholo graffiti, Chicano art, all the things that you've seen coming out of LA, why is it so special and different than everything else around the world?
Can I comment on the possibility and this work we just talked about here, plus about the Caltrans and all that? I want to say, a lot of us have a lot of experience. And let me tell you, experience is that what doesn't work, okay? We've done a lot of things. I put on a lot of shows, curating shows and all that with graffiti. And I would have the best guys tag up the gallery and all that, and I would have the owners after my butt. And even these were 30-year-old men, and it was hard. And I remember that we would, all of that would organize and frame and Stosh over here and Carmelo and all that. And we would have lawyers start calling us up, because we would go up public and everything else as saying that we were contributing to the endangerment of the youth. I had lawyers calling me and saying that the endangerment of the youth through the chemicals of the spray can. And also I had lawyers call me saying that they were going to watch every single program, every radio program, and keep track of us and everything. So it was very, very difficult to get things motivated. Coming down is that I'm an older person. I'm 20 years older than the oldest writer. I started way early, before the cruise and all that. When I talk to the youth, they don't listen to me. I can speak about vision and spirit and truth, motivation, don't give up and all that to the 30-year-olds. I can speak to them and they understand exactly what I'm talking about. They in turn have to talk to the 20-year-olds about stopping the graffiti and all that. 20-year-olds have to talk to the 18-year-olds, and after most of the tagging, most of the destruction and all that, is little 15-year-olds. Scratching the aluminum, putting acid on the large windows and all that, they're doing the most destruction. Painting the signs of the freeways and all that are basically the real young guys. Mm-hmm. I have the vision that of trying to make the graffiti the most incredible artwork that it is. Trying to, it's our job to prove it. People like Ritland, Slick, and all that kind of stuff. When we have the youth, we say, okay, here's your option. You can do, because graffiti artists don't compromise. We don't ask, as Luis Partis once said, we don't ask for permission, we ask for forgiveness. Nothing, we never compromise anything. As youth, we never knew what we were going to do, clothing or be famous or travel and all that. We never even thought about it. That was not our motivation. But to do what we do now, we can offer the youth, okay, you can do what you want. You can put up your name, no compromise, no nothing. Either you put it on this wall, right here, and you could go to jail. Or you could do the same thing on this wall. It could be in magazines, TV, hip-hop movies, and everything else and all that, and be famous, and maybe get paid for your skills and all that. That's what we offer them. That's what we ask for the city of Caltrans and all that. Give some space for the professionals. Give space for the really great stuff and all that. We're not going to stop tagging. Nobody can stop tagging up the look here. I always say you need a minimum of 10 years in the street just to even call yourself a graffiti writer. So there's a rite of passage, that their destruction. LA used to be called the mural capital of the world. That's gone. That's gone. Why? Because of the graffiti writers. We destroyed that. We only could blame ourselves, you know. And then sometimes when I go to the youth and after, so I speak to them, I said, hey, you like this dirty city? You like all that stuff? You like all that crap out there on Caltrans and freeways and all that? I go, you're going to inherit it. Your job is going to be working for Caltrans and all that stuff. So don't have you know, get it up yourself. Just try to figure things out yourself. So, I mean, I sympathize with Caltrans and all that. You have a big job. I would hate to be you. But, you know, I mean, what do we have to offer? Blame it on graffiti. You know, the same gangs on graffiti are the gang laws. The gang laws that come down on the graffiti, you know, and stuff like that. And these are the same gang laws in the murals. If a mural gets tagged, it's washed out. You know, beautiful mural, either if it's Chicano or regular graffiti. I suggest that we make it a graffiti mural capital of the world and try to protect it. Have the Chicano murals back, have all that stuff. But you know, with respect, have the walls where they are. And the tagging is still going to have to be covered up. You know, you've done a beautiful job of matching the blends and the browns and the tans. I like that. You know, it's still going to cost millions of dollars. But it's the youth. And after that's what I say. I know it's hard to speak to the youth. It's a very youth. But if we give them a choice, to give them an option, and they can see who they know who we are. They see us in the magazines. They see who the heroes are. They know that we travel around the world. And, you know, how would you like it to go to Milan and to Rome and all that? Pay, hotel, everything else, food, you know, it's cool. You tell the youth that's what they want there too, you know. So, I mean, there's responsibility on our end, on graffiti end, but we also need help and understanding from the cultural affairs. Al was doing this 17 years ago, you know. There's nothing new, nothing's changed, you know. We have a lot of experience and that doesn't work, but we need new answers and a new song. Your question was,
how's L.A.? You answered a lot of the question on why L.A. is so special, or it was so significant. And I'm talking about how the murals were here, but you've traveled the world. What is significant about L.A. that you don't see anywhere else?
It's one thing. I was just down in Guanajuato, Mexico, down at the graffiti conference. I gave lectures at art school, design school, and all that. Graffiti magazines and crews from Mexico City and all that. And they were showing me, and I was writing my name, and they showed me this world book by Gatz, Nicholas Gatz, from German. And they're saying, they're all upset because they say, how come Mexico isn't here? And they're good down there. They're good. They said, how come Mexico isn't in it? And I got mad. I had a lot of visions in my dreams. And I got mad, and I told, you're not in it because you're not hooked up. The one thing that's unique about L.A. This one afternoon, about 3 years ago, I was like an email. Man one says, here's this guy from Germany who wants to put a graffiti book, all that, just send him your images. So basically it's for this high resolution, 300 dpi, 10 inches max on one side. You burn it, you mail it to Germany, you're in, you know, like that. These guys in Mexico City said, how come they felt they didn't qualify. They felt they weren't good enough. They felt that they were left out in some ways. They felt they had to meet Nicholas Gatz first and all that. I said, no, this is what's the world, this is what's happening. This is an internet book. Internet book means if you're not connected internet, if I knew who those guys were, I could have sent that same email down there that afternoon. They could have burned their name, just sent it. They could have been in that book in one day. That's what L.A. is really hooked up. We are an internet virtual graffiti world. Before we used to battle individually, do tags and this and that. Crews used to battle, set different sections of the city. Then we used to battle city against city and all that kind of stuff. And as you get older, you don't even do that. My work is I compete with guys from Japan, from Italy, from Germany, and all that, just through participating in the magazines or in the videos and all that stuff, you know. That's my way to participate and to battle and to compete. That's what motivates me. I gotta watch my butt from these two guys. And the only way I can do it is just be more of me here. I have to be more Chaz, you know. I have to make more my work more Chaz, my vision more clear, better, and all that. We love competition. One of the first things I told Rhett, I go, kick my ass. Yeah. And we motivate each other. And that's what LA is unique. One of the one things about, you know, New York, they're still doing bubble letters. You know, they're still doing their name, they do their books and all that kind of stuff. And they're not doing anything like that. The Germans, those guys are tough. They got matching pencils that match the spray can and they jeans. The Japanese are coming up hard. We gotta watch out for Japanese. You know what I'm talking about. But what's unique about Los Angeles is that you know, if you go to your high school where you lived and all that, that place is torn down. Your neighborhoods don't exist. This place, when people come here, I tell them, welcome to LA. It's fake. Everything is reinvented. That's the way we interpret our graffiti and our art. We reinvent ourselves. We are unique in that way. We come up with the greatest letters, the greatest images. We have Hollywood. They used to complain and bitch to me about New York. Well, characters are graffiti. And letters are graffiti is only on subways. You guys don't have subways, you know. We have characters because of Hollywood. LA went up big because of the Chicano mural movement, you know, from the 60s, from the 70s and all that stuff. There was nothing stopping us. Rhett and I gave respect to some of the Chicano painters, you know. LA is tough. You have a reputation for a lot of fights and all that. LA is not afraid to travel, and you know something? None of us go out and call up agencies, we don't call up magazines and all that. We are all invited and all that because they know that we have the stuff. That's our future. And the thing is, because we have vision and the ultimate thing we defined and defend, we can prove it that we're good.
Yeah. Thank you.